Welcome to the OHM Show, first show for 2019, and we are doing a roundtable around what's coming in 2019. My guests today are Sean Gourley, who is the CEO and founder of Primer, a San Francisco-based artificial intelligence company, and Michael Driscoll, who is the founder and CEO of Meta Markets, a company that was acquired by Snap a few months ago. Michael is known for his work in data and data science. Welcome, gentlemen, to the show.
Great to be here, Om.
Thanks, Om.
I thought, you know, since we are kicking off the new year, let's talk about the year, what comes next, and how this new world of data and constantly created data is going to impact our lives and our businesses in 2019. I would love to get your points of view about, you know, the world at large from a privacy standpoint, from the standpoint of infrastructure, from the standpoint of business logic, all the things which might change as data becomes more and more real time. So, Mike, you want to take it from the top, as they say?
Sure. I know we were talking about the holidays, and one of the things I think that exemplifies this move towards real time data is a purchase I made a couple weeks ago for my wife. We got a Peloton bike. And as I made that purchase, I was given an option to finance it with a company called Affirm Max Levchin had built. And what amazed me was the decision on whether I was creditworthy to finance, you know, a Peloton purchase was made in seconds. When I think about the amount of infrastructure under the covers, I think it's actually gets to two of the topics, you know, in fact, maybe all three that we've discussed. You know, you've got the ability to draw an enormous amount of data about my financial background in seconds. You certainly get the AI and the algorithmic power to figure out if I'm credit worthy. And there is also a privacy element. I think increasingly companies have found ways or are starting to find ways to share data, consumer data, but in a safer and more compliant process. So I think we're going to be seeing, you know, more and more disruption at the consumer level with the ability to do financial transactions like that in real time. I think, you know, we'll see more of that in 2019.
Hey, Sean, you want to add to that? But before you do that, do you want to comment on the fact that a very senior executive at Snap is looking for a loan from a firm to buy a bike?
I think we'll just need to call out what everyone's thinking at this point, you know, that as a senior Snap executive is taking out a payday loan to finance a Peloton bike for his wife. I mean, things are pretty rough in this neck of the woods in Silicon Valley. It's been a rough year, and executives are taking out payday loans to finance high-end fitness equipment. So we feel for you, Mike.
I want to point out it was a 0% loan, and every rational entrepreneur knows that 0% loans that aren't payable for many years are a good thing. So always better to have more capital sooner.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed. I think it's fascinating here, right? You've got this, you know, frame it a different way. It's not so, you know, different from what we're seeing in places like China, where everyone has a social credit score that is continually monitored, you know, always available, you know, being updated as you change your actions. And if you don't pay for your ticket on your train, the voice in Chinese over the loudspeaker will tell you your social credit score will be impacted. And, you know, you frame it a different way. That's when you're going in and making a purchase. They know who you are. They know how you're likely to behave. They can calculate that, you know, very, very quickly. And hey, presto, for you, Mike, here's 0%. For someone else, maybe it's 5%. For someone else, I'm sorry, you don't get to buy it. And that's going to be the reality, right? Like, we've got good enough at taking that data and processing it to make decisions very, very quickly that it's going to be ubiquitous, right? This is going to be everywhere. I think the interesting question out of that is, how good are these algorithms? You know, what are they really keying off? How do they perform, you know, if there's a financial downturn? Who are they limiting? How is it biased? And what sort of inequality are they encoding? So we're in quickly in a world where this is real, it's happening, and it's ubiquitous. What are the consequences? For you, Mike, that seemed like they were relatively good, but for other people, they may not be.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest, you know, challenge right now. I think every time I think about a new technology, the question which comes to mind is, what is the non-obvious impact of this technology? And I think this is where, whether it's Affirm or Uber or Postmates or Caviar or whatever it might be, what is the non-obvious impact of that technology that we are not seeing? I mean, and the reason I, you know, asked that question is, we did not ask the questions as, or not we, I mean, Mark Zuckerberg and co. didn't ask the questions, the non-obvious impacts of social networking. You know, what are those? And I think that is where, as an industry, we need to be thinking about. And I think you're right in pointing out that this kind of data-driven Darwinism is an interesting situation right now. So I don't know what to make of this, but what do you guys think about that?
You know, I will say that one of the things that happened in 2018, which was a big story for those in the media and the advertising world, was this GDPR legislation that occurred in Europe. And I think we all felt it in practical terms because we got a bunch of emails from various companies asking us whether we approve to be on their mailing lists. I think that for the first time in 2018, we saw that consumer privacy was starting to become a topic that was being talked about and consumers actually cared about. For a long time, a lot of folks had claimed that, you know, really no one cared about privacy. So I think this is actually a turning point. And not only is it consumers, I think it's also companies that recognize the value of their own data and that they shouldn't be kind of turning it over, thinking about the consequences of the services that they use and the data that those services create. And I'll give an example. I was at Uber's headquarters a couple of months back, and I noticed that Uber does not allow their employees to use Slack. And one of the major reasons for that is they didn't want to have all of their employee conversations stored on Slack's centralized servers. So I think there are some implications for the way in which companies interact with other companies out there in the cloud, being mindful of how their data could be used or abused.
Right, like from a consumer standpoint, right? Like I think about it, and you know, Sean rightfully pointed out, it's like, who's writing, you know, these rules? Who's creating these algorithms? What is their background? What are their biases? And I think that whole thing is such a black box that it is becoming increasingly difficult to not be anxious about technology. And you saw that across the board in 2018. I don't know, do you expect, Sean, that 2019 will be continuation of that trend where the suspicion of everything technology is going to keep increasing?
Yeah, look, I think that is where things seem to be going, isn't it? I think people would look back at 2018 as sort of the year where I think a lot of people, you know, looked at tech with a critical eye for the first time. I think it was delivering such kind of tremendous returns and the velocity of all the kind of the new things that were happening. People got kind of enamored by that. And then I think, you know, in 2018, for the first time, people started looking a little bit more critically and starting to kind of see what it was actually built on and what was actually going on there. And I think people saw for the first time that there was this exploitation, I think, that the services and the products that they were engaging with were actually exploiting them and exploiting the data, and in some cases manipulating their behavior based on top of that. And so that was just sort of scratched that surface with 18. I think as we look into 19, that's going to kind of trickle down into kind of the world of regulation. And so we've seen the first bits of that with things like GDPR. But we're going to see a lot more regulation in the tech industry as politicians, you know, start to kind of find a place to kind of win over some of the public based on the fears that they have. So I think that concern is going to translate into some regulation. I don't have a lot of faith that regulation is going to be necessarily focused and accurate in what it, you know, achieves. But we will definitely see a lot more regulation come into the space. And then I think we're also going to see a lot more, right? Like we just saw, you know, that article come out, you know, a couple of days ago was, you know, someone was like, well, what if I paid one of these companies, you know, could I track the location of my own phone? And turns out for $300, you could track your phone around New York as you went in real time. And people are like, wait a second, you know, there are companies that know my GPS location in near real time, and I can buy that for $300. So there's going to be a lot more of that, I think, as business models that have been built on top of exploitation of data, you know, start to become revealed. And I think that's going to put a real shakeup into the industry, you know, particularly an industry that's built around advertising, which at its heart is pulling data from people, exploiting that, and then selling it on to higher bidders with scant regard sometimes for the privacy implications of that there. So we're going to see a lot more of that as different business models start to become kind of brought out into the daylight.
Let me follow up on that. In a sense, you look at the problems we have with, you know, regulation. And we know how they have regulated Wall Street or instruments which they don't quite understand. And, you know, we look at our current legislative bodies and look at the people who are elected to these bodies, and their lack of understanding of technology actually makes it, you know, regulation even more scary prospect than anything else. You know, you had senators asking for AOL and iPhone help from the CEO of Facebook in a hearing. And I'm just looking at that. I'm just like, if these are the people who are going to help regulate the technology industry, we are even more in trouble than just letting the tech people do whatever they wanted to do. So I think, you know, as a citizen, I'm more concerned about out of the frying pan into the fire. It's a pretty scary situation.
The caveat on that thing around regulation was, I don't think it's necessarily going to be good, but it is going to come, right? So the issue, exactly right, is I think you've got a bunch of legislators and lawmakers with a very tenuous grasp of the underpinnings of the technology, you know, going forward and trying to regulate it. And that's going to have exactly the kinds of consequences that, you know, you outlined, which is, you know, there's going to be some very strange regulations that come in place. And for an industry that's survived largely for the last, you know, 15 years with basically zero regulation, it's going to come as quite a shock to this part of the world.
And the question is, you know, to what extent is the toothpaste already out of the tube as far as, you know, the companies that are benefiting the most from the use or the aggregation of consumer data are the large guys, you know, the what we've called typically as the FANGs. And they've accumulated so much and have so much scale compared to their, you know, nearest competitors, that it's hard to imagine how you can undo the enormous amount of data that Facebook, Amazon, Apple, Netflix, and Google have accumulated on, you know, every human and every device attached to every human on the planet Earth. So it's hard, even if regulation is coming, it is hard to imagine how you reverse what kind of has already been set up.
Absolutely, you're right. I think the regulation is not about just the FANGs. I think what the phone companies do, the wireless phone companies do, what our, you know, big data brokers, you know, there's quite a few of them. You have internet ad exchanges. You have, you know, a whole slew of companies which exist in this, you know, they live under the shadow of FANG, but they do equally, you know, crazy things with our private information. Mm-hmm. When I think about it, there is no one who is actually talking about the citizen rights around data and privacy. I think that's the bigger way to think about it. It's not a company-specific problem. It is a citizen-specific issue which needs to be dealt from the point of view of humans, not, you know, not from the point of view of companies. You know, otherwise we end up like, you know, what Sean just said in China, where basically the government decides you're not worthy of being part of the society and you're banished. That's essentially the next, you know, it's like we send people to jail and they will banish people from society, where you can't get a job and you can't get food and you can't get a phone. And I think that's probably worse than going to jail.
And I'd sort of say, and to underscore, like, the technology exists here to do that today, and it hasn't really been leveraged to do that in this part of the world, but it absolutely is possible. And then, you know, you look at that and you say, well, what's preventing this, right? There's certainly nothing in the technology that prevents it from happening. And then you start, you know, looking and saying, well, if government did come in and start thinking about ways to use this technology in the ways that China has, you know, what would that look like in America where the government and the state was using this data to kind of control and manipulate?
In the US, we have Facebook and Google doing a good job of that, right?
They do. And one of the things there is we saw what that looked like. It looked like a bunch of clickbait stories, shaping the worldview of everyone that logged into Facebook, coupled with, you know, identical kind of sunny pictures on Instagram of lives that you'll never lead to kind of make you feel depressed. And so there was this kind of collective hysteria around fake information and a collective depression around a life that didn't quite seem as good as the one you were looking at your friends having. I don't know if that's better or worse than what's going on in other parts of the world. But yeah, I think we've seen what the world looks like when you throw it across to an advertising orientated set of algorithms. You get this kind of depression and hysteria.
Well, this got too dark too fast. Wait, I thought this is the new year. We're going to talk about some
positive stories.
Yeah. I don't know why we always end up talking about Facebook and advertising, but I guess it bothers us enough to kind of talk about it more often. But can I switch gears a little bit and then we'll come back to this gloomy topic, because it is very important and perhaps, you know, something which will weigh on our minds through 2019. Hey, Mike, what about some good news, man? What do you think this streaming data does? Does it create new company opportunities? Does it create opportunities for founders and entrepreneurs to go out and think about, you know, new ideas? And does 2019 become, you know, that year when some of these technologies which are bubbling under kind of come to fore? I mean, I asked you a bunch of questions. You can go pick any one of them.
I do think that the most exciting area of big data is streaming data, data in motion. And there's been a lot of talk about, you know, the Internet of Things and, you know, the instrumented planet that we all now live on. But I think for the first time, it always takes a while for things to become reality. And yesterday, for instance, I got someone reached out to me who's working with a Chinese car manufacturer, and their autonomous vehicles, you know, are now starting to be designed and built. And he's just got, you know, absolute gigabytes and terabytes of telemetry data that he has no idea what to do with. So I think that there are lots of untapped opportunities with this kind of new class of streaming data coming off of cars and, you know, I hate to say it, but, you know, our refrigerators, all these smart houses that the cool kids are making Alexa and Siri control the lights in. You know, it's hard to predict exactly what businesses get built, but the way I often think about it is first we need to build some software that can help, you know, corral data of this type. And I think there's a lot of opportunities to build new kinds of software to work with streams of data versus, you know, just your traditional databases. The second area, and I'll defer to Sean on this, is ultimately you've got to do something with all that data. You've got to build algorithms and insights over it and make decisions with it. So I think that's where the artificial intelligence applied to these telemetry data coming off of autonomous vehicles or other things out there on the planet Earth. I think that's a pretty exciting area. And, you know, I expect we'll see some early stage company formation happening there in 2019.
What about you, Sean? What's your take on this?
I always look at this from the perspective of what are the new data collection sensors that are out there that we didn't have in the years previously. And Mike really alluded to one of those, which are these cars. And if you spend any time on the streets in San Francisco, you just see five different self-driving car companies continuously kind of circling the city with their fleets of vehicles. And, you know, as you know, there's this huge amounts of data in every one of these machines picking all that information up. And that's data we never had before. And it's huge volumes of it, and it's across sensors from radar through to LIDAR through to kind of even ultrasound, and of course all the cameras on top of that. So that's a really interesting data set that we're collecting. I think another one is, as you look at the new sensors that are going into phones, we're seeing, you know, all sorts of new sensors go into phones. Things like, you know, being able to measure the barometric pressure for hyper-localized weather forecasting that's now, you know, able to go out on the scale of hundreds of millions of devices. But I think for me, the most interesting stuff is still going to come in this kind of form of health. And, you know, it's kind of, in some ways, it's the inverse of some of that darker stuff where, you know, we can take your data and start to kind of exploit you. I think, you know, if you look at the health side of it, is like we can take that data and really start to understand, you know, who we are and what we're about and start to get, you know, very accurate in terms of predicting certain kinds of diseases or predicting certain kinds of things that'll make us feel better. And, you know, it's still kind of amazing. You can go in with, you know, the new iWatch and get your ECG, you know, recorded there, which is just, you know, incredible in a consumer device. Or, you know, take one that's a little more scientific, you know, the imaging of eyes to kind of determine, you know, certain kind of diseases that are there, the imaging of cells to determine how they react to certain kinds of drugs. Computer imaging, I think, is undergone a huge transformation, and we're seeing that now in the medical field. So, yeah, as I would look at that, I think the health stuff is probably going to be the most optimistic there, and I think we'll be able to do a lot with the data that we've been collecting to improve the quality of our lives.
What about, you know, like what you are doing with your company? You actually look at the large amount of data available on the internet and you find signals in it. I mean, when I think about it, it can be viewed as negative, but it can also be viewed as a very positive thing that you can get, you know, early indication on, you know, whether it is problems around, let's say, Ebola virus or, you know, famine or, you know, drought or anything of that sort. There is just so much weak signal out there in on the internet. And as we start to think about streaming data, we start to think about better ways of analyzing information. Do you think any of those technologies or any of those approaches start to have a bigger impact in helping fight, you know, climate change and disease in 2019, or it's still far out in, you know, in the years to come?
Yeah. So look, I think we've seen, you know, sort of 2014 through 2017 was really in the world of machine learning. It was the world of image processing, and we got very, very good at processing images. What we've just sort of seen, I think 2018 was really a breakout year for language processing and understanding language. And a lot of the techniques from deep learning, you know, migrated across into the language analysis space. And so we're just at the start of that S-curve in terms of performance enhancements for algorithms for understanding language. And what that means is getting high fidelity natural language understanding is becoming more and more of a commercial reality as we take that work from science and bring it out into the commercial environment. So, you know, what it allows for things like, you know, what we're doing here at Prima is you can, you know, literally read everything that's being written about everything that's unfolding in the world around us. And that means you can identify events that are happening. You can understand how those events are connected together. You can do that at a global scale. And all of a sudden, patterns that weren't obvious to an individual human or an individual analyst start to become apparent to these machines. That allows us to start thinking about second-order effects and second-order impacts that I think it's just naturally quite difficult for us as humans to process. And so when we sort of look at this, I think machines have a very different kind of intelligence capability than humans, and they can see the world differently to us. And as a result of that, they can see patterns that we wouldn't otherwise have seen. That, I think, is really, really crucial for us as a sort of a species if we're going to navigate the complexity of the world that we're in. You know, we have to be able to bring these technologies that can understand it in ways that we humans with our limitations that we can't.
Do you think we have the ability to actually come up with the right way to ask the questions which we need to ask various, you know, algorithms and you know, the basically when I think about the world, the problems we have today at present, whether it's for, you know, image processing, whether it is, you know, the Facebook algorithm or Google, it is not a problem of, like, you know, people being idiots. It's like people not asking the right question. The things you are describing, Sean, looking out, are all about asking the right question. that is a much bigger challenge for us as a race than anything else.
Yeah, look, absolutely. And I think, you know, one of the things here is the big questions for us is what's really important, what really matters as things unfold in the world. And that's sort of a hard question to answer, particularly with the limitations of what we have as humans. But it's ones that we're trying to train machines to help answer for us. And I think, you know, if you are only kind of limited as a lot of the stuff in advertising is to kind of, you know, did someone click on this? If that's just sort of your major metric of success, that's only going to capture a tiny fraction of how important or how significant that information is. So if you can actually go a lot deeper into that and saying, well, what is this saying and why is it saying it and where is this information in context of everything else, you can start to get a lot closer to a deeper understanding of what's going on that just simply isn't possible from a kind of a more simplistic metric of did someone click on this.
But in order to do that, you know, I guess we have to, you know, have people who want to ask those questions, right? Like, I think that's what I'm like. So far, it is the questions are being posed by people who are programming, you know, essentially web services. And now the things you're talking about is, you know, we got to bring in social scientists, anthropologists, people who understand like the human condition need to be involved in the whole, you know, programming of, you know, so-called programming of the future services, right? And I don't see that happening anywhere right now. None of the companies, whether they're small or big, are thinking about it in that fashion right now.
Yeah, I think there was a realization in 2018 for a lot of these companies that that might be needed. And, you know, we've seen certainly some movements towards that, but I would hope for 2019 that your you know, points are taken on board by companies. And as we've done, you know, here with the work that we're doing is, you know, you need people with a range of different skills to come and kind of design these products that are built on top of these algorithms. And, you know, if the only kind of, you know, performance measurement is kind of boiled down to a single number, you're probably doing it wrong. That's, I think, you know, the piece of this is we'll as an industry have to wrestle with the fact that, you know, some of the things are not quite as measurable. And so they can't be optimized quite as much. And I think that's, you know, what people have been designing products for a long time have always realized. Like, there isn't one number that, you know, defines the kind of the quality of, you know, the first generation of the iPhones that came out. It was sort of a sense of an experience, of a feeling of things. And people in product have known this for a long time. And as we start building products with algorithms, it's going to be a similar kind of experience, right? It's not just going to be one number that determines the success of the algorithm.
When I think about this, or rather what I think about often is like, how do you reconcile this need with a system which puts a premium on growth at any cost and, you know, regardless of, you know, whatever the consequences might be, Wall Street, which rewards only growth and not long-term thinking, and it's always thinking in terms of, you know, quarterly numbers. And a stock market, which is essentially event-driven and needs more noise in the system in order for people to make money. And I think when you start to think about it, it's like doing the right thing and the reality of the modern environment are two distinctly different, you know, situations. I don't know, Mike, you want to take that? Being the resident socialist?
Well, I certainly did enjoy reading Thomas Piketty's Capital in the 20th Century book last year, as a good socialist would. But, you know, I think it gets back to what Sean has talked about. I wouldn't quite say that there's certainly never one number that defines a business. I think what the kind of myopic nature of the way that we measure businesses, whether how Wall Street measures them quarter to quarter or how content-driven or advertising-based businesses measure themselves, I think a lot of that just has to do with the fact that we don't have nuanced enough data about these businesses and long enough time horizons to understand, you know, really how to measure the value of the products and services we give to customers. So what we're seeing is a little bit of a backlash from 2018 that, you know, if you just show people listicle articles or images on Instagram that make them feel bad about themselves or news content that keeps them in their filter bubble, whether on the liberal or the conservative side of the spectrum, and you increase some myopic measure of your business, like click-through rate, that in the long term, that may not be creating more valuable customers. Challenge is it just takes a while for us to see those effects. And it's a lot easier to measure things with one number than it is to measure them in a nuanced way, as Sean has mentioned. You know, I guess my feeling would be it starts with the recognition that like something's broken. I think 2018 was a year where I think a lot of us feel that some of the business models of these large data collection, advertising driven businesses is somewhat broken. And now it's a question of, you know, are there better ways to measure and predict success going forward? And I think that's where, you know, some of the things that Sean's business is doing and some of these, you know, other companies working in AI, taking a bigger picture and a broader lens to things could help. So I think we need better measurement. Maybe it's like the fast food world. For a while, people were thrilled with the convenience of having food, you know, instant food after the post-World War II era. But that led to a lot of bad effects and people have started to embrace, you know, a different style of in the food culture. I think we're starting to see a shift in the way that we interact with technology, you know, hopefully a slower and more, maybe a more holistic way of doing it.
Wow, you've gone from being a socialist to like new age.
A hippie.
Yeah, a hippie. All right, let's try and wrap this up. Tell me, what's your forecast for 2019, which is, you know, end of 2019, what do you expect will happen by then?
I predict that Mike will continue to achieve 0% payday loans and will lose 12 pounds in the Peloton cycling experience. I need to put it back on in a sugar-induced binge as Snapchat, you know, continues its mediocre performance run on the stock market. So that's on a personal note. But coming more generally, I think, look, for me, I think we're going to see, you know, people have gone from kind of taking data and finding interesting insights to really kind of integrating these predictions into business models. And we've got very, very good at predicting behavior. I think 2019 is going to be the year where we move beyond prediction and people start to realize that you can not only predict behavior, but you can actually manipulate it. So we're going to see the first kinds of business models orientated around manipulation. I don't quite know what they're going to look like or if they're going to be good for us or bad for us. You can certainly think about behavior manipulation, I think, as being what data and algorithms and real-time applications of those are going to give us. And that can be for health benefits. It can be, you know, reading and understanding the world in a better way, or it can also be for trying to change people's behavior for the worse. You can think of all sorts of ways manipulation will come through. So we've got prediction. Next up is manipulation.
Cool. What about you, Mike?
I think two areas. I think one, I am, like Sean had said earlier, I think we're going to continue to see rising consciousness and people's health and things like mindfulness, the success of the mindfulness apps on Apple and the Android ecosystem are examples of that. So I think health applications, I think, will continue to be a big area in the consumer world. I think in the enterprise software world, the biggest trend that I'm seeing is a shift both to streaming data applications and processing frameworks. Autonomous vehicles are, you know, one example. But I think the other piece there that's a big theme that we'll hear more of is just shifting computation processing away from the cloud to the edge. So I think what goes hand in hand with the rise of these instrumented and smart devices is that we can do more and more on those devices. You know, the LiDAR cameras on top of cars driving around San Francisco don't need to ship everything to the cloud. And so there's a lot more exciting stuff that's going to be happening back at the client, you know, on the client side of the enterprise device world.
I will go out on a limb and make my own prediction here. I believe by 2019, we will actually see the impact of human friction on all sorts of direct-to-consumer services. I think we've had this, you know, belief that people will keep spending on, you know, Uber of X or Caviar of Y kind of companies, or we will see like a straight to the right growth on, you know, products which are being sold on Instagram and other social networks. I think 2019 is the year when all that crazy talk, you know, meets the reality of our inability to, you know, make more and more money and spend more and more money. What I call human friction. So that is my forecast for 2019. But I, like the two of you, I'm extremely excited about the possibilities of what tech can do. I think it still is a pretty fertile area of innovation and possibility, whether it is health, whether it is, you know, making farmers grow better crops, creating communication channels. I think in 2019, I hope we see more and more of that positive technology and less of the ad-driven ecosystem, which has been thriving for last 25 years. So gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me for this first podcast. I hope we'll have you back on the show later this year and talk more about what's been happening.
Thanks, Om. A pleasure to be talking.
Thank you, Om.
Hey, Mike, go ride that Peloton and lose some
weight. My next step.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Take care.
Bye-bye. See you.
Bye-bye. Care.